How do we make sure we're raising kids who know in their bones how to ask for, give, and refuse consent? Kids who have deep respect for their own and others' bodily autonomy and feelings. And how would our world look different if we all raised kids like that? That's what we're talking about today on Sex Ed at Home, where we teach feminist parents how to raise sexually smart and healthy kids and change the world, one conversation at a time. Before we get into that, though, I want to let you know that if you're looking for information, skills, and resources to help you talk with your kids about sex, bodies, and relationships with ease and confidence, you need to join Everybody Talks newsletter. You'll be notified every time a new episode of the podcast drops, and you'll be the first to know when we release new courses, workshops, and other helpful stuff. Okay, now let's discuss consent. So I think about consent as having three main components: identifying and expressing feelings, asking for consent, and giving or refusing consent. So all of these components require different mindsets and different skill sets, and we'll be diving into each one in quite a bit of depth in different episodes throughout this season. But before we can do that, we need to understand what the heck consent even is and what it isn't, and what it looks like in our day-to-day lives. So that's what we're diving into today. So let's just start with a really basic definition of consent, and we're going to do the middle school essay thing, and we're going to go to the New Oxford American Dictionary. They say that consent is permission for something to happen or agreement to do something. Okay, so I think that's really important because it shows us that consent is actually very broad. It's not just about bodies or about sex. And this is important, especially when we're thinking about talking to kids about consent, because I think often what happens, especially right now in American culture where, you know, the Me Too movement is still going strong, there's this really strong association between the concept of consent and sexual behaviors. And that's great. And we need that. And we need to be absolutely more proactive about teaching people affirmative consent in sexual settings, right? But I think the problem with that when we're thinking about teaching little kids about consent is that little kids obviously are not having sex, right? So there's a disconnect there between people sort of understanding that in order to really skillfully employ consent practices in sexual and romantic relationships later on, they have to have a strong foundation already in place of consent. And that starts when they're tiny little. And when they're tiny little, the consent that they're learning about and that we're modeling for them is not sexual consent, right? Because we're not engaging with them in that way, of course. So we need to think about the other ways that we give and ask for consent about other things in our lives all the time, with our kids, with our partners, with the other people we interact with in our lives, even with strangers, right? Like we might go up to somebody in a crowded restaurant and say, "Is this seat open? Can I sit there?" That's an example of asking for consent. Or you might call someone and say, "Is this a good time to talk?" You might ask your kid, "Hey, do you want to play a game with me?" Or you might look at your partner's lunch and say, "Oh, that looks really good. Can I have a bite?" Right? So these are all examples of ways that we are asking for consent in our everyday lives. So consent is really about setting our own boundaries and respecting other people's boundaries. And that can be sexual, but it does not have to be. And I think that's really important, again, when we're talking about consent with kids, because they are not going to be in those sexual situations, but they need to start that skill building and lay that strong foundation of understanding the concepts of consent and the skills needed for consent from a young age so that they can have healthy and fulfilling relationships throughout their lives with romantic and sexual partners and just with people, right? Because consent is actually a really important part of all of our relationships, sexual or not. When we think about consent as parents, it's really important for us to set boundaries with our kids because it models for them that people can have boundaries and maintain loving relationships, and it also shows them how to do that. So here's the thing, here's the secret about sex ed as parents, and really about anything that you're trying to teach your kids. They don't remember most of what you tell them, but they internalize the messages and the teachings that you are giving them intentionally or unintentionally by what you do and how you behave, both with them and with the other people in your lives, because they're watching how you go about those relationships and they're learning from that. So actually, with all things related to teaching our kids sex ed, the first thing we have to do is figure out what's going on with us, right? So we can't teach our kids how to give and receive and refuse consent skillfully if we don't know how to do that ourselves. And a lot of us don't, right? Because we didn't grow up, especially in American culture. And, you know, I can speak from white American culture because I am a white person in America. This was not part of the conversations that people were having, certainly when I was growing up. And I think it really only entered the zeitgeist within the last maybe 4 or 5 years or so, in meaningful ways, right? So we really have to look inward and see, like, how are we modeling this for our kids? How are we enacting consent in our lives? Are we doing it in a way that aligns with our values or not? And if we're not, then, you know, the real work is actually starting with ourselves. And the good news is we can practice with our kids. So, for example, you know, when my kiddo, who's almost 9 now, was a baby, I really felt like I had no boundaries. I had especially no physical boundaries, but really no boundaries at all with my kid. So I was constantly nursing, I was baby wearing what felt like 24/7, I was co-sleeping. I felt like I literally had a barnacle just attached to my body at all times, and I really didn't feel like I could, even though I had a co-parent, I had supportive family members, I had friends who were willing to help, but I really felt like it was my responsibility as, you know, the person who had created this tiny human in my body and who was now responsible for nurturing them with my milk from my breasts. I really felt like I had a responsibility to have this kiddo sort of attached to me at all times. And I felt really, really guilty even going to the store without them or like putting them down while they were napping so that I could go take a shower or whatever. I really felt like my body was the property of my baby and that in order to be a good mother, I needed to grant total access at all times. Now, I think that that is a common and natural feeling, but it was also not healthy, right? I was exhausted. I was totally touched out. And it was because I wasn't listening to and respecting my own needs, and I was putting what I assumed were my kiddo's needs above my own. And it took me a really long time to understand that actually I am a better parent when I have better boundaries, because then I have more to give. And I feel less exhausted and I feel less resentful when I'm attending to my own needs, both physical and emotional. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking nursing. I'm not knocking baby wearing or co-sleeping. I have opinions about those practices. And obviously, I did them all myself. And there were a lot of great things that came out of those practices. I'm also not saying that people need to do any of those things to be good parents. I'm simply using those behaviors and practices as examples of behaviors that made it difficult for me personally to have good boundaries, because I felt like those were the things I needed to do to be a good mother, and all of those things required me to be like physically attached to my child 24/7. And of course, you know, all of the ways that mothers in particular and parents in general are judged and guilted no matter what their choices are is a huge topic that maybe I'll cover in another show. So now that my kiddo is older and I've gone through some sort of personal development myself, I'm much better about setting boundaries. And what I've realized is that it's not only good for me, it's also good for my kiddo, because it shows them that we don't have to do everything someone we love wants us to do or everything we think they need us to do in order to maintain a loving relationship with that person or to show them that we love them. So one of the ways that this shows up for us at home these days is at the dinner table. So my kiddo really likes to sit on my lap at the table. We have a just generally very sort of physically affectionate relationship. And kiddo likes to sit on my lap at the table, but I really don't like having a kid on my lap while I'm eating. So for a long time, when kiddo would ask to sit on my lap, I would say, sure, when I'm done eating, because usually I don't mind once I'm done eating. And so they've learned over the process of asking me many times and having me say no in a loving and kind way that now they basically never ask to sit on my lap while I'm still eating, but they still ask if they can sit on me when I'm done eating. And you know, some days, most days actually, I'm totally into it. I love snuggling with them. I'm like super happy and touched that they still want to engage with me in that way. I know that like my days of having a kid on my lap at all are probably limited because we're approaching adolescence, and that just probably won't be a way that my kid wants to engage with me. So I'm into it most of the time, and I say yes. As soon as I'm done eating, you are more than welcome to sit on my lap. But there are some days when it's 100 degrees out and I'm hot, or I'm about to start my period and I have cramps, or I'm just like grumpy and I need a little bit of like emotional space and personal space. So I'll just say to them, you know, I love snuggling with you, but my body is feeling kind of uncomfortable right now, or I'm feeling a little grumpy today and I just don't really feel like having anyone on my lap. My body feels like it needs a little space. And, you know, I still feel a little pang of guilt about that sometimes when I refuse. But kiddo actually is really good about just saying, okay, no problem. Or sometimes I'll offer something else instead. I'll say, you know, I really don't feel like having anyone on my lap right now, but I would be happy to go sit next to you on the couch, or I'd be happy to rub your back at bedtime. So I'll offer an alternative form of physical affection or touch that I think might still meet my kiddo's needs, but that's something that I am happy to offer, right? Because what I realized is that it's not only really important to teach kiddo to accept a refusal like that without making it mean anything about them, it's also really important for them to appreciate the fact that it's not fun to engage with someone physically or emotionally or in any way if they are not into it, right? Like, let's take a non-kid example for a minute. If you went out on a date with someone and you thought it was going really, really well, and you were having so much fun, you were feeling super attracted to that person, and at the end of the date, you were like, hey, I really want to kiss you. Do you want to, you know, do you want to do that? Can we do that? And they say yes. And then you kiss them. And then you find out later somehow that they didn't actually want to do that. That would color your whole experience of that kiss, right? So we should be normalizing this idea that it's not fun or pleasurable to engage with people in ways that they don't want to be engaged with, right? So when I'm telling my kiddo, like, I don't feel like having anyone on my lap right now, but I'd be happy to sit on the couch with you and rub your feet or whatever, it's teaching them that there are lots of ways that we can engage with people in relationship, and that the most important thing is that everybody's needs and feelings are being respected and that everybody is doing things that they want to do. Okay, so here's another example from a mom that I worked with in one of my workshops. So she has a son who's about 10, and they really like to snuggle together on the couch. But when they're doing that, he often will touch her breasts. And she thinks it's sort of like a holdover from nursing or just a sort of general reflection of the physical closeness and like ease of affection in their relationship. But it makes her uncomfortable and she doesn't like it. But she was hesitant to say anything to him about it or to ask him to stop doing it for a couple of reasons. So one, she was afraid that it might come across as sex negative, and one of her strong values is teaching sex and body positivity. And two, she didn't want to discourage her son from snuggling with her, which is something that she really enjoys, except for when he touches her breasts. So, what we talked about was how being sex and body positive doesn't mean that you have to like or accept or agree to all behaviors. In fact, a big part of being sex and body positive is learning to identify what feels good to you and your body and what doesn't, and then to respectfully communicate those feelings and needs and desires and boundaries to the person that you're interacting with. And that applies to our partners and our friends and whoever, as well as our kids. We also talked about the fact that there was some real black and white thinking going on for her. So in her mind, the only two choices were to snuggle with her son and put up with touch that she didn't like, or to risk losing that snuggling or to not snuggle at all. But there is actually a third way, which is snuggling in a way that feels good to both of them. So I encouraged her to talk to him honestly and tell him that she really loves snuggling with him. She's super happy that, you know, they're so affectionate with each other and she wants to keep doing that, but that it doesn't feel good to her body when he touches her breasts. And maybe he could put his hand on her belly or her thigh or whatever instead, right? Like, so identifying an alternative that he could do and offering that up instead. So by putting up with touch that didn't feel good to her, this mom was not only ignoring her own feelings and needs, which is just a recipe for, you know, resentment and exhaustion and all those things I mentioned earlier, but she was also really doing her son a disservice. Because like I said, when we tolerate something that doesn't feel good to us without communicating our feelings to the other person, we put them in the position of making us uncomfortable or resentful or avoidant without giving them the chance to do something about it, without letting them know what we need and how they could behave differently to avoid making us uncomfortable. That doesn't do them any favors. And in fact, it's actually disrespectful to the other person when we don't communicate our feelings and our needs and our boundaries, because we are putting them in that position of doing something that makes us uncomfortable or is potentially harmful to us. And I want to be really careful here, right? Because there's a difference between being in a mutually respectful relationship where people are generally have each other's best interests at heart, are like generally open to receiving feedback and changing their behaviors. There's a difference between that and being in a relationship where there is abuse or assault or, you know, any kind of sort of unhealthy power dynamics going on. So I just want to be really clear that I'm not in any way suggesting that when people are abused or assaulted, that it's because they didn't do a good enough job clearly communicating their boundaries. That's not what I'm saying here. When that happens, it's 100% the perpetrator's fault. But when we're in relationships where people are generally trying to do the right thing and want to listen to each other and be attuned to each other's needs, we have a responsibility then to clearly communicate our feelings so that the other person can respond, right? Because they can't be mind readers. And that includes our kids. We can't expect them to read our minds. So if we have a boundary, if we have a need, we are allowed to express that. And not only are we allowed to express it, but it actually is better for our kids and for us when we do. So when we practice consent in relationship with our kids by communicating our own boundaries, it really helps us to build healthy and mutually fulfilling relationships, because we're clarifying how we want to be treated and how others can unintentionally cause us to feel discomfort or harm when our boundaries aren't respected. And that is an incredibly important lesson for our kids to learn. We're also showing them how to set loving boundaries, right? We're modeling what it looks like to respectfully communicate a need or a boundary, and that's not only okay, but expected in healthy and loving and respectful relationships. So when we're teaching about consent, it's not just consent. We're also teaching crucial social and emotional skills, including self-awareness, self-regulation, perspective taking, empathy. And we're going to dive into all these things a little bit later in the season in other episodes. But I just want to really reiterate the point that these are crucial, crucial skills, and they're much, much broader than just sexual consent or romantic relationships. We're teaching kids, when we teach the skills needed for consent and when we model good consent, we're teaching kids to preserve their own dignity. We're teaching them to recognize the full humanity of themselves and other people. We're showing them that everyone has feelings and needs that deserve to be heard and respected, and that those feelings and needs are probably different for ours. So we can't assume, we have to ask. Teaching consent is also a really important safety measure. So, and I want to be really clear here that if kids are victims of sexual abuse, it is never their fault. There's never anything that they could have done differently that would have kept that from happening. And it's also true that when kids have strong consent models at home, they're safer from sexual abuse and assault because they're less attractive targets for predators. And it also makes them less likely to harm other kids because they have that strong understanding of bodily autonomy and respect for other people, right? So when we teach kids that they are the experts on their own bodies and feelings, and that they have the right to decide who touches them and when and how, and that they get to decide whether and how to share their feelings and energy with other people, it makes them more likely to understand when their boundaries have been violated, that that's not okay, and that they need to tell somebody about it. And when they come from a household that really values consent and models consent, it shows them that the people in their family are safe people to come to when that consent has been violated, and it makes them more likely to tell you. It makes them more likely to report it. Right? So this is actually, it's not just a nice to have, it's a crucial safety piece for your kids. So let's talk a little bit about some strategies you can use to teach kids about consent. So this is really sort of developmentally contingent. There's not one specific way to teach consent at every age. So it really needs to be sort of, like I've been talking about this whole episode, embedded in your family life, modeled by you and the adults in your household. And it will evolve as your kids develop and as they grow and change in both sort of their bodies, their feelings, and their desires and needs and their abilities to communicate. So here are a couple of ideas about how to either start or deepen your practice of consent at home. So if your kids are 4 to 6, here are a couple things you can do. Most of the time when kids are this age, parenting is still quite physical. So ask them before you pick them up or hug them. Ask them before you help them wash their hair in the tub. I don't know why, but kids this age can never rinse all the shampoo out of their hair. Ask them before you help them, right? So before you engage with their body, make sure that you ask them. Another thing you could do is if you are tickling or chasing or teasing them, if they ask you to stop, you stop immediately. And you make it really clear that you're doing that because they asked you to stop, right? And you make that very explicit, like, okay, it's your body. You said stop. I'm going to stop. And if this is a new practice for you, if you haven't been doing this at home, that's okay. Don't beat yourself up. And you might just want to say to your kids, like, I've been thinking about this, or I learned something new and I'm going to try something different now because I learned this new thing. And that's really great modeling for them too, for them to understand that when we know more, we can do better, right? When we have more information, we can change the way we do things. If your kids are 7 to 9, one thing you might do is if you tend to roughhouse with them or do other play that involves a lot of sort of like gross motor or physical touch, things that might get kind of intense, like wrestling or tag, pillow fights, anything like that, agree on a safe word and talk to them about how, if things get too intense or if they want the play to stop, that they can say this word and you will immediately stop, no questions asked. So that's a really great practice that you can try. One other thing that you could try is kids this age will often have sort of big feelings, and some of them are less likely than they used to be to express those feelings to parents and caregivers. So ask them if they want to talk about their feelings when they're upset or mad or having some other big emotions. And if they say no, don't press it. Say, okay, I'm here if you change your mind, and I love you and I will support you. And that's it. Just leave it at that. Because remember, they get to decide. They have to consent to talking about what's going on with them. If your kids are 10 to 12, if they have their own room or, you know, a place where they keep their stuff, like their backpack or their dresser or whatever, respect their privacy. Ask them before going into their room, before going through their backpack or their dresser or wherever they keep their stuff. That's one important way that you can model consent for them. And another thing is, ask them before you share information about them with other adults. So this is something I see a lot, actually, is that parents will share information about their kids because our lives are so intertwined. Often stories about our kids are also stories about us. We are major players in those stories. We are having experiences as their parents. But if there's personal information about your child, like they're starting puberty, they got their first period, they have a crush on someone at school, whatever, don't share that information about them without asking them first. Okay, so those are some ideas, a few ideas for the different age groups about how you can sort of start or deepen your practice of consent at home. I'll have a lot more ideas and skills for you in future episodes. Next up, we'll be talking about consent and feelings in our next episode. So I hope you'll tune in for that. Thank you so much for listening to Sex Ed at Home and for joining us in raising sexually smarter and healthier kids and changing the world one conversation at a time. If you found today's episode useful, head over to Everybody Talks website, www.everybodytalks.co, and sign up for our newsletter to be notified when new episodes drop. You'll also find courses, workshops, and resources that will help you build your skills and confidence even more. That's www.everybodytalks.co. Until next time.